back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are in downtown Baltimore today celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I got the blue ones and the pink ones. I got Betty Boop scratch-off tickets courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. Big appreciation to them for putting us out on the road. Our friends at Goodwill, our newest sponsor. This is the truck that's going to come by and take the whole closet full of stuff my wife and I have cleaned out. And our friends at Window Nation, we're doing two for two. Get two windows. You get two free. Simple as that. Go to windownation.com to learn more about that. We're at Luna Del Sea. I'm two bites. I did have one bite during the last break after Dave Sims of the Crab Cake. They have steak fries here. They're going to stay warm. No problem. This guy wrote to me last week, and it's the political season. I think one of the things about the Crab Cake Tour was bringing people out and having conversations about making the city better, right? So No one better to do that than people running for office. So Dhruv Vignaraja came on the show last week. We were at the Land of Kush doing a vegan crab cake. Per him, Brooke Learman, and Odette Ramos, all vegan or pescatarian, telling me about a vegan crab cake. So I had a vegan crab cake. Delicious. Go up to Utah Street and check that out. And I had all the mayor candidates on a couple years ago, and I thought, if I do this crab cake tour, especially if I do it in the summer of election season, we're going to be able to sit around on a 100-degree day somewhere in the city and really get to the heart of what I created Baltimore Positive was, which... let's have some conversations about making the city better. Yeah. You've put your tie, your suit, your lunch money, you know, your career, all that to run around in a suit on a 100-degree day to try to clean this thing up. We can talk about Marilyn Mosby, talk about the role, we'll talk about the city and crime, but it's really nice to meet you because I haven't
nice
met you, and I appreciate
good,
you coming
good,
by.
Good.
And when you reach, Don and I are very, very, hey, man, equal time.
Yep.
You know, so I want to make sure that we get to hear your side of the story as well. And
thank you.
I am not endorsing anybody in this race, but certainly I have a vested interest in the city, as we all do. And I know you do, too.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, tell me what's going on for you and where we are, because this campaign got pushed out a little bit, right?
Yep.
There's more time in this campaign. I don't know who that helps or who that hurts, but it's a pretty stock question for all of you that it was a moving target running for office this summer in the primary.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It really, I think it helps me a great deal because it allows people to get to know who I am. You know, one candidate, the current office holder, everybody knows. The other candidate is always on Fox News. And
right.
So, you know, that's where they are. I'm on the doors. We've hit over 12,000 doors. We're old-fashioned, old-school, earning it, every single vote. We're knocking on the doors. We're talking to people. So whether it's an 80-degree day or a 50-degree day, we are on those doors talking to the voters.
What are you hearing?
That's what you have to do.
What are you hearing? What's the number one thing you hear?
Crime's out of control and they're ready for a change. They are ready for a change, and they are open to seeing who I am and what am I about. That's what I'm hearing from the voters, and that's what we're hearing. It doesn't matter what neighborhood we're in, whether it's Homeland, Pimlico, whether it's Ashburton, whether it's, you know, Lauraville. It doesn't matter. Whether it's Riverside or Locust Point, Fells Point. Everybody's saying
public
the
same
safety. Thing. Public safety is number one. People are tired of being sick and tired. You know, matter of fact, I have to take that line from one of the gentlemen. We were knocking over there in East Baltimore. He says, Mr. Bates, I'm tired of being sick and tired. And I said, you're right, sir. We all tired of being sick and tired. And, you know, we're tired of being afraid. You know, when you talk to seniors, they're afraid to come on their stoop. One lady talked about how she loved her stoop, cleaned it every day, but doesn't clean it anymore because she don't want the drug dealer sitting on it. See, think about that. Think about that, what that means. That means you're tired of being sick and tired. They're tired of dysfunction in our city.
Well,
they
feeling captured
leadership.
In your own home, we've all felt that way through COVID, right? Now we want to come out, and the question is my wife safe? I lived here in the city for 19 and a half years. How did I feel about her on a 38-degree night when the sun sets at 5 o'clock in November, walking down to the CVS to get her prescription? How would I feel about that? And in my own neighborhood, I didn't feel nearly as good about it in 2021 as I did in 2003 or 2004 when I moved downtown.
You know, I agree. What you're going to do now, you can give her a ride. You're going to watch her go in, and you're going to watch her come out. You're going to park in front of the store. You're going to make sure she sits in your car. You're going to watch her button her seatbelt. You're going to make sure no one's running up to your car to carjack.
You're going to look in the
rearview. You're
going to
look every
single
way.
I'm a rearview mirror checker.
I am too. Yeah, I keep your head on the swivel.
Well, you live in the city.
Yep, definitely. So that's what it's about. People are tired of being sick and tired. You know, that's the reason I'm running. I have a six-year-old daughter. And so for me, it's simple. You know, I've had a phenomenal career. I've done everything you want to do. Heck, they've written a book about the work that I've done with the Gun Trace Task Force called I Got a Monster. They profiled me in the HBO miniseries where it showed me as an actor playing me for the work that I did in busting.
I want to talk about that because we had Simon on. I had Zorzi on. You know, you know, you talk about a God of Monster. We had both Brandon Soderbergh. We had Banner. I know all the, you know, Fenton. We've had Fenton on. I had Simon a couple weeks ago. That story, my sister-in-law was in town this week. My wife turned 50 yesterday.
Happy
love you,
birthday,
honey.
Happy birthday.
So we went over to Beaumont. It was delicious. I don't have leftovers. Tony's sending me home with crab cakes down here in Luna Del Sea, so pays their friends. But my sister-in-law was in, and I was trying to explain to her the Gun Trace Task Force.
Yeah.
Like, we were just together. We were out driving around, and I said, yeah, it's a TV show. You should check. And she likes drama, likes TV and whatever. She drives. She's like, I like to hear the book on tape. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't believe they made a dramatization out of this, but it was under, we were living here 4 years ago. This is recent. Many people like have stories of crossing paths with Wayne Jenkins or anybody in that association. So I want you to tell the audience, because I don't know the whole story in your association exactly with it, but I do know you have an association, and I know the, you know, all the stories of the innards of guns and Gun Trace Task Force, and I'm from Dundalk, Jenkins, and Essex, all of that.
Yeah.
But your role in this and telling these people that that can never happen here again.
Yeah. Well, basically, what I, as a criminal defense attorney, you have the opportunity to see a lot and understand what's going on with the police. You read the statement of facts. You listen to other individuals. And what I constantly was hearing was that Wayne Jenkins and officers around Wayne Jenkins were stealing. They were robbing individuals, taking their money. They were beating them up. So I told this to a number of prosecutors. And so everybody in this race, they knew about it. Mr. Vigna-Raja, he used some of those. Daniel Herschel, that was his guy.
Right.
And so when you understand that background of the Gun Trace Task Force, those officers kept doing it time and time again. So when the advent of a body camera came out, I had a case. And I gave that case to the prosecutor, Ms. Mosby's office, and it clearly showed the officers going into my client's house without a warrant, i.e. a burglary. They're breaking in. They didn't care about that. And so I eventually decided that I need to go ahead, and anytime Wayne Jenkins had a case, I would go ahead and go find out who had that case, who was the individual they had arrested. I would take that case, whether it's half price or pro bono, and I began to build cases against Wayne Jenkins. I was winning case after case after case. The Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office didn't pay attention, so I knew the U.S. Attorney's Office would. Eventually, I got a case where they got the quote-unquote monster, the great big guy with the drugs and the guns and the money. They robbed this gentleman. That's the case where they broke into the safe and they stole a great deal of money. And that was the type of case that should be federal. I do a lot of federal work. However, the feds did not take it. They left it stateside. And it was a case in which they clearly violated his constitutional rights. I knew Wayne Jenkins had broken in the house without a warrant. I knew he'd stolen money, he'd stolen drugs, done a lot of stuff. And so then we get ready, we file our motions, we go to court, and there's one star witness that I have, is an older African-American teacher who watched them break in the house. And so I subpoenaed that witness to court, and I had that witness sitting at the door. So when Wayne Jenkins walked in to testify, he saw her. He knew that we were going to talk about the house, which then we had to talk about the $150,000 they stole. At that moment in time, Wayne goes in, he testifies, and he pretty much throws the case. He thinks it's game over. From there, I have a conversation with Wayne. He was like, hey, I just want you to know, you know, what's going on. You won again, Ivan. Because by that time, I understood Wayne's pattern. When I told Wayne, look, and this is in the made-for-movie docuseries. I said, look, Wayne, everybody's talking. They're talking about what's going on. They're talking about what's happening. And you recognize this is the only one way that's going to end. He comes back a few months later and says, hey, I just want you to know I'm no longer going to be on the streets. I respect you. And that's what it is. And so I knew that the feds were already investigating him because the feds had reached out to my clients. I gave the feds a lot of the information I had begun to develop as I, a prosecutor, since the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office wouldn't do anything. The U.S. attorneys did something. I gave them that material. They put my clients in front of the grand jury. I knew he was about to be indicted. He was indicted and arrested. And here's something very few people know. Not only was he indicted and arrested, but he calls my office to have me represent him because he thought that much of my skill set as an attorney. Think about it. If I'm that good of an attorney, why can I not be that good of a state's attorney? Because you need to have someone who's going to fight for the people, someone who's going to hold people accountable, whether it's the police or the criminal element. And so for me, one of the things that people really have to understand about Baltimore City, you have to have a respect, you have to have a credibility amongst the criminal element and amongst the population to say, I understand what's happening. I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to hold people accountable. Because remember, I also represented Sergeant Leisha White in the Freddie Gray matter. So I represented police because I knew that she had done absolutely absolutely nothing wrong. And so they respect me for that. But I've also represented a number of citizens that have been treated erroneously, wrongly by the police department. Here, you look at the Gun Trace Task Force. Having done that, I have been clearly an advocate and a fighter for the people.
Well, it's not an either or, right? Dirty cops have to come off the street,
yeah,
and criminals have to
come off the street, right?
So why is it so hard to bust the cops when they're doing this? Why? How did this go on? And I know I'm going to sit and watch Simon's series. I have not watched it. I haven't watched The Wire yet. I admitted that to David a couple weeks ago. He wasn't as upset about it as the internet is. The internet's very upset that I've never watched The Wire. He didn't care at all. But in seeing this, and now it's been made into a dramatization, or I guess it's supposed to be a documentary, I guess, but dramatized. You've watched it. How accurate is it to your eyes?
It's very accurate. Look, if there is something that you can question about, it's the Sean Souter issue. And I do recognize, you know, Twitter has really been going back and forth, the Sean Souter issue. I personally think there's a lot more there. I don't necessarily think it was just this suicide.
You don't believe it was a suicide?
No, I believe there was a lot more.
Why do you say that publicly? People can say anything on Twitter.
I'm biased.
Got inside information.
I'm biased. I knew the attorney, Jeremy Eldridge, very well, so I knew a lot about what was going on. He later, you know, talked to me about conversations they would have. And, you know, it was between attorney-client privilege, between him and his client. And based on those conversations, from what I could tell and what I could glean, he didn't have a need or want or desire to commit suicide. Now, people do things for various reasons, but I like to sit down and remember the man the way he was. He has a wife, he has a family, he has children. And so there's no need for me to pile on. They're already grieving. That's how I look
at it. But if he was murdered, we got to find out who murdered him, right?
Exactly, 1,000%. And if you look at the medical examination report, it still says homicide. So as far as I'm concerned, it's still an open case until someone says differently. And so that's how I looked at it.
But getting bad cops off the street, like, you know, the notion that they're above, you know, we had a police officer in Minnesota put his knee on a man's neck for 10 minutes, dies in front of everyone, and there was still some conjecture as to whether he had committed a murder or not, right? I mean, in people's minds, should he be prosecuted? Of course he should be prosecuted, right? But we haven't operated that way as a society or a country in full. That a police testimony always had more weight and always was more believed, no matter what, whether it's Wayne Jenkins or not.
Well, think about it. If we all of a sudden do not believe police, what's that saying about the system? We don't believe in the system.
Sure.
So we want to make sure we believe the police. We give the police the benefit of the doubt. What is the game changer? What's the game changer in the past 5-6 years? Has been body camera. Body camera footage has changed everything. I don't need to take your word. I can look at the body camera footage to see really what happened. You know how many cases we have won because the police weren't accurately writing down what was in the statement of facts? It's changed everything. That's what allowed me to really help hold the Gun Trace Task Force accountable. When I had the body camera footage, before they would write whatever they wanted to. Now, understanding that, look, if you haven't been involved in the criminal justice system in the last 6-7 years, you don't understand that. I have. Really, you know, so I get it. I understand it. I know how to make it work in a way that nobody else really does within this race. And so having that experience really puts me in a unique position. Not only do I have that experience, I started a law firm from scratch. So I have a law firm. I have management experience. Remember, I also was a prosecutor in the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office for 6 years. I did low-level crimes all the way to homicides. And so I've been a defense attorney. So having that entire amount of experience, having the respect from everybody on all sides of the equation is the reason why, you know, for me, look at Greg Bernstein, the former state's attorney, the last state's attorney, everybody would agree, when we had murders under 200. And guess who he has endorsed? Endorsed Ivan Bates. Remember, Mr. Vigna-Roger was hired by Mr. Bernstein. Mr. Bernstein gave him a division. He was so terrible in that job that Mr. Bernstein has decided that I'm the individual that should be the state's attorney because he knows what I can do. If you think about that for a job interview, the last interview, the last person you worked with, if he's not going to endorse you, but he endorses the rival, who are you going to select? You're going to select that rival.
Ivan Bates is here. He's Democrat for state's attorney. We're talking to all of the political candidates we can here on the trail. We're at Luna Del Sea. We're celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, as always, with Maryland Lottery, our friends at Goodwill, as well as Window Nation. Let's talk about Marilyn Mosby a little bit, because I only know her through TV. So I've been doing Baltimore Positive. We're going on 3.5 years now. Open invitation, you know, to come on and sit here and speak. Her husband have had nothing to do with me or anything that's like real media that's open in this way. As a city resident, I couldn't vote for that, you know. Yeah. So talking to Theroux or you or anyone else, I need change. I don't vote in the city anymore. I voted the last 2 decades in the city. I'm in the county now. But for me, that change was the lawlessness that I've witnessed, that I've seen, from the dirt bikes to what's going on in Fells Point after dark with all various things that I would say are illicit, or things that if I went down to Fells Point and thought I was going to sell beer out of a cooler in front of restaurants or sell drugs or prostitute, any of those things, that I would be arrested. In any American city in our culture, it would be unacceptable, a lot of these things. That's citizen Nestor, but I also know realistic Nestor is there are a lot of people willing to vote for her. You and Theroux are out. We're going to have an election on July 19th or before. Mail your ballots. Get your ballots. Make a plan to vote. But there's an issue with her that there is support for this in the city to something. She's got a lot of votes. What is it about her that makes you want to run that says we got to be better than that?
Well, a couple of things. One, the Office of State's Attorneys is a mess. You know how many lawyers have left? At one time, I think, from what I hear, 240 lawyers have left that office since she's been state's attorney. She only has a staff in terms of 153 lawyers, of which now, from what I understand, there are only 67 lawyers doing felony work. It's an absolute mess. So we can continue to keep going the way we are. What has it led to? This is absolutely anarchy.
So how do you change that? So budget, people, humans, lawyers, and then being able to get into a courtroom and put away the guy that killed Barksdale, right? Like,
yeah.
Period, you know?
Well, it's a couple of things. One is leadership, point blank in discussion. You know, one of the things I think really sets me apart from everybody is, look, I understand I struggled. You know, I wasn't the greatest student growing up. I struggled. My father told me I need to get my life together. I went to the United States Army and changed my life. It's that struggle. That's that Baltimore struggle. Because in Baltimore,
now,
we do
you
it a runaway. My father was military. I grew up everywhere. Went from Virginia to New Mexico to Germany, everywhere.
Now, what led you here?
My aunt had an aunt, 75 years of age. She lived 11 West 20th Street, apartment 6S. My mom said, look, she doesn't have anyone. Would you mind going to be with her? And I did. I moved to Baltimore to help take care
what
of
year?
My aunt. 1995.
You've been here a long time.
So, yeah, I've been here a long time. Bought a house up in Reservoir
Hill.
Well,
you found a different city here in 1995. I was talking to Tony.
Totally
was here 2003. And I talked to Tony about just this location. Like,
totally
Chloe
different.
Came down here. She's my summer intern. She doesn't know Baltimore downtown or vibrant. She's 20 years old, right?
Yeah.
So she hadn't seen it in that way. And I said, man, the convention was 200 events a year.
Yeah.
The Royal Farms Arena then, the Baltimore, the First Mariner
yeah.
Arena then,
yeah.
was, you know, 150
Remember
nights a year.
The Orioles when they were
81.
In the playoffs.
Of course, all
yes.
of that, right?
Robbie Alomar was there.
That's 95, 96.
Yeah,
right.
I was all there.
Right.
It was great time to be in Baltimore.
Right.
The Ravens win the Super Bowls. You know, that's
when somebody
was
comes
great.
Here in 1995 and I wouldn't say to you, well, why did you settle here? It was a hell of a place.
It was a great place.
It's a great place.
You know, but, you know, I'm here. This is my home. This is my home, and I want better. We deserve better. So, for me, I'm fighting.
Well, tell me what Marilyn Mosby's doing wrong and how you're going to change that.
Well, first of all, she's run the office into the ground. First thing, a lot of people, I'm the only person in this race people want to come back and work with. I have a plan. I have a short-term plan. I have a long-term plan. I'm going to have a relationship with the police department. Day one of my administration, I'm going to a roll call. I'm going to look the officers in that division, that roll call, in the eyes and say, let's do this together. We're a team together. I'm collaborative. I'm working together as a team. And I know I can't do it by myself, but I know I can do it with everybody. And that's the biggest difference. I'm not going to argue, fuss, and fight with people. We're going to do it together. If we have a disagreement, you and your wife, you have a disagreement, you talk about it amongst yourselves and you try to work it out, but you're not going to go air your dirty laundry out for everybody to see. We're not going to do that. Because think about it. Right now, we're like the Orioles. Orioles, hey, people don't see hope, but I see hope because I see a great minor league system. We're going to get those young attorneys. We're going to train those young attorneys. We're still going to make sure that we have the money for the free agents to get the marquee free agents to do what we need, but we're also going to be training that bench. Now we have Ali Rossum. He's there, and so we have hope in a different way with the Orioles that we didn't have 2-3 years ago, but we had a plan. I have a plan the same way the Orioles have a plan. And you know what else I'm going to do? Because I'm a big sports fan. So one of the things I was really excited to talk sports with you, the same way the Ravens are about stability, that will be me. Because we can't use a state's attorney's office as a stepping stone. We have to say have someone who's like, you know what? This is an 8-to-10-year job to have not just a good office, but a great office. And for me, it's the only job I want. It's the only job I want to do. We will
well,
be
how do
there,
we get
we
the killers
change.
Off the streets? I mean, how do we
convictions.
How do we get the bad guys?
We're winning cases. We're winning cases. Remember, I win cases. That's what I do. That's why they view me as one of the best. That's why the Daily Record has viewed me the way that it has viewed me for the years. I know how to win cases. I know how to win cases as a prosecutor. I know how to win cases as a defense attorney. Once you start winning cases and holding people accountable, the word gets spread really quickly. Because of that, they will change their behavior. But you must win cases. Right now, they're not winning cases. So wouldn't you, if you're a criminal, you do it because you know they're not going to be held accountable. They may arrest you, but you're sitting down for a little while, and then you're going to go home. Two doors over there to jail. One leads home, and one leads to Division of Correction. Right now, everybody's going home. I need to make sure that door leading to Division of Correction, people start going through that door because they'll be held accountable. We do that. I do that, you'll begin to see that change.
Ivan Bates is here. He is running for state's attorney. He's a Democrat. July 19th is the election. We're down here at Luna Del Sea talking about things. So the notion, I'm talking about petty crime and the things that have been decriminalized. And I don't mean smoking a doobie out here on Pratt Street. I'm talking about crimes where there's a victim. That's a crime to me. Crimes where there's a victim, and even if the victim's a business owner and they're selling beer out in front of the place, what can you do to stimulate police activity, right?
Yeah.
That gets people, that the police have, we're going to write a ticket, we're going to write a summons, you're going to go, there's going to be accountability.
Yeah.
There's going to be something to pay when you break the law in the city of Baltimore. Whatever that, I'm talking about murder. I mean, that's clearly at the top.
Yeah.
But carjacking, all those type of things. But I'm talking about the things that make life less pleasant for all of us. Dirt bikes rolling down Pratt Street every Sunday night, 400 strong, wheelies up.
Yeah.
Old ladies trying to cross the street. It's unconscionable to me. It really is. I don't see it anywhere else.
No, I agree, and that's because when you let people do whatever they want you, that's what they're going to do. They're going to take over. And we can't do that. You have to allow the police to use all the tools in their toolbox. So what does that mean? Is if there's drug possession, they have to be able to say, you know what, you have an option. You can go to treatment, or if I have to prosecute you. But I want to direct individuals to treatment. I'm not trying to give everybody criminal history records, but we can look and see that we have a drug problem in Baltimore City, across the country. And the drug war is one of the things they talked about in the
David Simon, we talk about it being a failure.
Yes, but let's focus and direct these individuals to drug treatment. Let's stop letting them just do what they want. Let's look at loitering, trespass, shooting dice. Why don't we go ahead and direct those individuals and give them a citation the first time? Because first you have to warn them. That's what the consent decree says. Second time, let's give them a citation. That citation means you come to what I want to establish, community court, and you'll now give me community service. 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, you can give me 48 hours of community service. Now you're doing something positive in the community, and we're holding you accountable. After you're waking up every single Saturday, you don't want to do that anymore. So now maybe when an officer tells you to move on, you'll listen. And those are types of things I think we really need to do. Let's rethink, but we have to hold people accountable. And if you decide you want to continue to trespass, well, you've decided you want to be prosecuted. I'll prosecute you, but I'm first giving you an opportunity to correct your behavior. If you don't do that, then now, unfortunately, I have to do it for you.
All right, so last 6 weeks here of the election season, getting around town, it gets hot. Our number one message is for everybody to vote, right?
Yeah.
Because it's so, so important. And I know you're out trying to sway people and get opinions. Give me the next 6 weeks for you as you run up on this. You've spent your whole life looking to do this, right? I mean, preparing to do this.
I wouldn't say my whole life in the sense that it's something that a lot of people kept asking me to do, asking me over and over and over to do. You know, for me, I was pretty happy and content being a father, a 6-year-old daughter, and running my law practice. My firm, I've been very successful. I do cases all around the country. However, for me, once I ran before, I thought I was finished. But now crime is just so bad. So for me, it's about knocking on the doors. It's about going to see the people, about talking to the people.
Learn anything the first time that's helping you this time?
Yeah, yeah. It's a different way you work, a different way you have the touches with people, different way you communicate. All that's very, very important. Making sure people see me, know who I am. Get my name out there. Talk to people. When people find out who I am, they realize that I'm genuine and I only want this really to make their lives and our lives better. That's when they're like, you know what? You're not an opportunist. You're a person who really wants the best for all of us. When they realize that there's no one station or one group that owns me, but yet I'm owned by the people, for the people, that's when they're like, you know what? You're the type of person we need to really have change. I'm not part of the equation. I'm the person who's no different than the next door neighbor knocking on doors. I'm the person who grew up cutting the grass. I'm the person that grew up being a paper boy. I'm the person that had failures and success. I'm the person that struggled. I'm the person that had to do it on my own.
You didn't have a second home in Florida?
No, I didn't have a second home in Florida.
I'd ask her.
I'm the person whose parents, they struggled. But I get what everybody's struggling, because we all want a better life for our family. We all want a better life for our children. And for me, that's all I'm struggling, to make sure we can have a better life and a better city. And so going out, talking to the people, seeing the people, it's been phenomenal. It's been great, because it lets you reconnect, especially after the pandemic, because it reminds all of us, life is short. We got to make the best of it at this moment.
Well, that's what I'm getting out right now. We're down here at Luna Del Sea. We're on Pratt Street. The Orioles are playing tonight. Come on down anytime you're around. Come get a crab cake here from Tony. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Ivan Bates running for office, but he is eligible for a Betty Boop scratch-off ticket. Are you blue or you pink? What are you doing?
Pink for my daughter.
Pink for the daughter. There you go. Well, good luck with that. Scratch that off.
Thank you.
Ivan Bates can be found. Your website, let me read this off. Your Bates for Baltimore. Bates4Baltimore.com. You can read Ivan's whole plan. I've just got the note card here. Thank you for coming by, man.
Hey,
having a crab cake with me.
Likewise.
And enjoying in the city. And for anybody running, if you're out there and you want equal time, throw me an email, ness@baltimorepositive.com. You are full proof that last week you emailed and I said I'd get you on, and here we
definitely
are, right?
Really appreciate it.
I'm glad
that
you came down, man. I'm glad you laid your platform out for everybody. It's nice to know you.
Definitely.
Anybody
likewise
that's got a shovel ready to build here, you know?
Do that work.
That's what we got to do, man.
And Baltimore's going to be simple. If you have an illegal handgun, you're going to jail. And so that's what they're going to remember me about. If you have an illegal handgun in Baltimore City, you're going to jail.
By the way, I couldn't believe I read yesterday, you know, Brandon and the city are going after the ghost gun. I didn't know ghost gun manufacturers were like real places. I thought ghost gun manufacturers like the people that mixed up the thing in the basement. Like, I literally didn't know this was legal to make ghost guns. I did not know that.
Yeah, it depends what state you're in, though. And so, you know, General Assembly passed a law that came in effect. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's in effect now. And so, you know, you see a lot of change with that, a lot of change. So, yeah, they want to hold them accountable. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We've seen how that happened, whether it's the cigarette industry or other industries.
Well, untraceable guns. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe that we allowed that to happen in this country.
No, I
can't believe we've allowed 400 million guns to go into people's hands here, Ivan.
Yeah, yeah. But
you'll have your hands full if your state's turning.
Yeah, but you know, all day, every day, I'm ready for the fight. Let's do this.
All right. Ivan Bates is here. We're down here at Luna Del Sea. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our good friends at Goodwill, as well as our friends at Window Nation. They're doing a special Window Nation this month in June. I took advantage of it. Buy two, get two free. I'm from Dundalk. I'm a cheapskate, so it's easy for me. Go to windownation.com to learn more about what they're doing. We're going to come back here. Doug Butchie is going to join me. My pal's going to be here. We have some other guests joining us later on in the hour as well. Luke Clippinger is going to be by here. I think he walked through the city. He might be limping when he comes in here through the 46th. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop eating crab cakes here at Luna Del Sea and talking Baltimore positive. Stay with us.